I'd like to divide the homily tonight into two parts. Because as I was doing the preparation for the homily, the scripture scholar that I listened to did that, and I think it's important because the focus, the first part, is the focus on did Jesus have brothers and sisters? And that is something that is asked of me regularly, and it's important for us to focus on it. The second part, I want to deal with the whole issue of, you know, that sentence in the gospel. It says, they took offense at him. It's a very interesting thing. When somebody speaks to you with wisdom, when somebody does even a healing or something, and that you take offense at him. It's a very interesting topic. So, first part. This may be, you may have to put this in your journal as the shortest Mass Father Mario has ever celebrated. First of all, the brothers and sisters of Jesus. The Catholic Church has and continues to teach that Mary did not have any other children. She is called Mary Ever Virgin, and she is, Jesus is the only child that Mary ever had. So how do you deal with stuff like this when you say they are not his brothers and his sisters? First of all, the very first thing that always makes me smirk a little bit is, if she had all those children, man, she did have a lot of them. Because the way I count, there were four names mentioned. Jesus would have been the fifth, and sisters, minimum of two. And so you're talking seven kids. I don't think so. But that's not the argument here. The issue ultimately comes down to how different cultures talk about naming relationships. Let me give you an example from my own experience. A couple of weeks ago, I did the wedding of what I call my nephew. Now, I call him my nephew because in Spanish, in the Spanish culture, that's what we call each other. Mi sobrino. That's the name for nephew. Now, in English, the relationship doesn't change language to language, but the way you'd refer to it is totally different. Because in English, he is the son of my first cousin. And so in English, he would be referred to as my first cousin once removed. Is that correct? Okay. My first cousin once removed. Which I think, by the way, is extremely cumbersome. But notice the difference in culture. In Cuba, when I was growing up in Cuba, everyone who belonged to the generation of your parents and was in any kind of immediate family, okay, they were always called tío and tía. And tío and tía mean uncle and aunt. And so, for example, my mom had a cousin. My mom passed away. But my mom had a cousin. And she is an older woman now. And let's see if I can get this right. My mom's cousin was married to a woman by the name of Miriam. My mom's cousin, first cousin, passed away. But Miriam, his wife, which I am not related to in any way, I grew up calling her Aunt Tia. always. I didn't even know how she was related to me. I just knew she was my tía. And everyone in my mom and dad's generation that was anywhere in the family that was kind of the extended family was uncle and aunt. And here, of course, you could never do that because it doesn't work in the American culture. Now, why am I telling you this? Because the way a culture understands and organizes its relationships are totally different one from another. And so I went and did my nephew's wedding, but I technically went and did my first cousin's once removed wedding. Okay? But we never refer to each other as that. So, in Jesus' time, that was the case. In Jesus' time, you referred to cousins as your brothers and sisters. Now, what's interesting, I find it interesting as having grown in both cultures, the Hispanic culture and the American culture, is that even today, if I want to say a person is my first cousin, how do you say that in Spanish? Mi primo hermano. Primo means first, primer, primo hermano, my first brother. So even in today, if I were to write that down, you would have to translate that my first cousin was my prime brother. Okay? And you would get totally the wrong idea about our relationship together, because it's just a different way of understanding. Now, in the Gospels, Jesus has several members of his family. These are Mary's either sisters or brothers or in-laws. They are the sons and daughters of the cousins that are around her, or her brothers and sisters. We don't know if the Blessed Mother had any brothers or sisters. Okay? And so when they're mentioned, that's what they're talking about. But what's interesting to me, and of course, it is to me the most easiest way to understand if Mary had any children, other children, is this. I want you to imagine Mary at the foot of the cross. Now, if you look in the Gospels, at the foot of the cross, there was three people. There were two Marys, Mary the mother of Jesus, and Mary probably her cousin. And there was the disciple that Jesus loved, John. John was at the foot of the cross. Now, when Jesus from the cross looks down and he says to his mother, Mother, and he looks at John and he says, Mother, behold your son. Son, behold your mother. He's talking to the disciple John. Now, don't you think it would have been slightly insulting for Jesus at the moment of his dying to put his mother in the custody or in the care of a total stranger and not to have said, my brothers and sisters will take care of her? Well, of course, if Mary had had other children, there would have been no other. And the gospel says, from that moment on, the apostle took her into his home and cared for her. Right? That would have been a slap in the face if Jesus would have done that having brothers or sisters. So, the constant teaching of the Catholic Church, and the reason I'm going into this is because periodically you'll hear it, especially from Protestants who'll be able to say, no, Mary, she had other children. Please understand, the issue, the theological issue, is Mary's 100% devotion to God himself. Celibacy, and Mary was married, but there was no sexual, the understanding of the church was that Jesus was born without sexual consort with Joseph. That's why what's called the virgin birth. Okay? And so what we understand, when Jesus says the word father, he is not referring to Joseph. He is referring to his heavenly father. Okay? And so Mary's total dedication to God, her ever virgin, the fact that she was dedicated to God, that's the only issue. It says nothing bad about human sexuality or having other children. It's just an issue of Mary's total focus on the mission that was given to her by God. Okay? So that's that part. And I wanted to bring it out because this is probably one of the Gospels that is most focused, that can bring up that issue. But now the second issue. You know, the question that really got to me when I was reading the Gospel, and she was saying that the people were saying, where did this guy get all this wisdom? I mean, now notice what was happening. The very fact that he had grown up there meant that he was totally neutralized. Totally neutralized. It reminded me of that old saying, familiarity breeds contempt. Ask yourself what it is about being too familiar that actually breeds disrespect. Because the word contempt means, I looked it up in the dictionary, to treat someone or something with the lack of respect that it is due. And so contempt comes out to meaning I don't treat you with the dignity that you say or that you deserve. That's why, for example, if you ever go to court and you behave in a way that is unseemly at court, the judge may charge you with contempt of court. And that is, you're not behaving respecting the dignity of the court in which you are. The court is demanding a kind of behavior, and you are to give it, or you will go to jail. That's contempt of court. So what's happening is that the familial aspect, the fact that these people knew Jesus from the beginning, meant that they refused or they could not see the dignity of Jesus as who he was, and strictly because of his familiarity. It's interesting that the Gospel says that they took offense at him. And you can almost see it, you know, because I know this has happened with me, with my brothers or my sisters periodically. You'll say, who are you to talk to me like that? And they may be saying something that is 100% true. But the very fact that you're there, your brother or your sister, means you throw it away. Because the very fact that they're family means that they have no dignity. And whatever they say has no dignity. And that's ultimately the problem with the family. Now, what I found interesting, and I still find interesting, is that that happened to me about the whole Catholic faith. I grew up Catholic. My mom was probably one of the most Catholic people I had ever met. I mean, the woman prayed herself into oblivion. Right? And it was precisely that she was so Catholic that made me angry. And not only was she so Catholic that it made me angry, it also made me, I chose to take offense at it. I don't exactly know what I'm going to say. Because there's something about the fact that it's your parents, and something inside of me says, I don't want her to be right. I don't want her to be right. She may be right, but she's my mom. And that means I don't want her to be right. There's a psychologist in the crowd. What is that? He just waved. Just got his PhD. I didn't want my mom to be right. Now, I think it's because that meant that I would have had to accept a lot of things that my mom told me, and I didn't want to accept them. But notice that the very fact is that they dismissed Jesus because he was too familiar. Now, in this parish, we have adopted a brand new mission statement. And the mission statement to me has a relationship to this. The mission statement of the parish is this: transforming cultural Catholics into intentional disciples. Now, what I would like to link, and I think it's a legitimate link, is cultural Catholicism with excessive familiarity. I think that most of us who were born Catholic and were baptized when we were babies, I think because we grew up with the faith, not all of us, but a lot of us have grown some amount of contempt for it. We almost say, oh yeah, that's just the stuff that I grew up with, and we tend to dismiss it. And I think it's much harder for those of us who were baptized Catholic to go from baptized Catholic to an intentional disciple of Jesus. Now remember what an intentional disciple is. First of all, a disciple is a student. And an intentional disciple means you actually have to register for the course. Now, to me, the course, when I call myself a disciple of Jesus, I'm saying that I look at Jesus and I want to learn to be human the way Jesus is human. Because when I look at myself, I notice that I am not the kind of human being that I ought to be. I think pretty much all of us recognizes that somehow we're not what we should be. I always find it very interesting that we are the only animals on the face of the earth that have an awareness of not measuring up to what we are called to be. I think we're the only ones. And once you understand that, and it doesn't take a long time as a child to understand that, the question is, well, how ought you to be? What kind of human being ought you to be? And I guess you could come up with your own version of what a good human being is. But the reason I am a disciple of Jesus is because I understand that the God who created me chose not to leave me in my own stew. That the God who created me basically one day said, let me show you what I had in mind when I created you. And you know that old saying, if you want something done right, you do it yourself. I think that God at moment in time said, I am going to become human to show you what I meant when I created human beings. I am a student of how to be human in the image of God being human. Because I believe that he is living out the life that I ought to emulate, that I ought to follow. And so I have signed up for that course. I signed up for it. That's the intentional part. Being a baptized Catholic, when you were baptized as a little kid, you haven't really signed up for it. You were signed up, but you haven't accepted it. And there has to be some moment in time when you make the decision that you're going to take the course. And you're going to not only take the course, and not take the course the way I used to do it in junior college. Junior college takes you 2 years, right? To get through it. It took me 4. And the reason is that I majored in poker in the student center. Okay? I would take courses, and then before the end of the semester, I would drop 2/3 of them. I was just trying to get out of the draft. But you can't, if you're going to take a course, you've got to take it seriously. If you're going to be a disciple of Jesus, you got to take it seriously. And you got to say, well, how am I doing? And that's called examining your conscience. How am I doing at being the kind of student of Jesus that I ought to be? And that is something that is far harder for people who were baptized as kids. You know who has it a lot easier, and sometimes I envy people? Converts. I think a convert, yeah, I know, Larry. A convert has it a lot easier because when they enter into look at the Catholic faith, they enter with fresh eyes and they do so voluntarily. They do so intentionally. You have to intentionally become a disciple of Jesus. And so the issue, I think, with this gospel is a very interesting one. How does the familiarity that many of us grew up with, how does that negatively affect your intentionality at being a disciple of Jesus? Do you go to church, or do you do Catholicism just because that's what you do, but you don't put a lot of thought into it? And if that's the case, then what you are and what a lot of us are is being a cultural Catholics. And I dare say most of us, I think all of us, begin as cultural Catholics. I think all of us do. But at some point, I don't know if it happens over a period of time or it happens at a specific time, at some moment, that intention has to be there. I choose to register for this course. I choose to go to class. I choose to do my homework. And until you do that, I think the danger in the gospel is present. That we have grown up with Catholicism so much that we tend to dismiss the practice and say, I know all about that. Sat through 1,000 rosaries, went to 1,000,000 masses. And I think that that's the danger. So that gospel is a good reminder. And I think the issue comes down to, for some reason, familiarity does breed contempt. Thanks for listening.